The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We have made it to the second hour, and the momentum continues here. Lane Kiffin 1 hour from now. If there was ever a tease for high drama, there it was. We've had a good time, and we are always happy to welcome David Ubben to the program. Of course, David covers The Athletic. And, David, today was the first day for Josh Heupel here, and I saw him a couple of places. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but how did it go?
As well as you can expect. I mean, you know, he's been around big-time college football for a while. He's not a first-time head coach, so he kind of, you know, the American is a little different than the SEC, of course, but
really?
Yeah, I think I've heard, I've seen, you know, but you know,
you might get an argument from the athletic director in Tennessee. Then.
Maybe you might be, you might, but no, I think, you know, it was fine. I think ultimately, he's got a pretty good feel for his guys and a feel for his program as well as you can. You know, 5-6 months in, and today was kind of about hitting on whatever positives they have. There's, you know, you kind of have to squint a little hard at the current moment, but I think for him, in some ways, that's an advantage because he's not dealing with the crush of expectations that some people are in year one.
Yeah, and you know, Tennessee fans, there was a time, David, that didn't matter who the head coach was, we were going to win. I'm assuming the time is no longer in Knoxville.
Yeah, I think you know, people thought when Jeremy Pruitt took over for Butch Jones, that was as low as the program could get. But this current moment, I think you're going to have a hard time convincing me this isn't the lowest point the program has really ever been. Where, you know, you talk to people around Tennessee, and I think if we win 6 games, I feel good. And like, when's the last time that sentence was said in Knoxville? It's been a long time. So, yeah, I think again, in some ways, I think that's an advantage for him because he doesn't have to be the conquering hero. He can be sort of, hey, let's pick up the pieces and let's show some promise and score some points. I think they'll be able to in year one. And he doesn't have to worry about the clock ticking on sort of chasing trophies for a while, especially if the NCAA decides that Tennessee's not allowed to chase trophies, at least in year one. So, you know, I think that can help him, big picture.
So let's talk about that because it's the rash that won't go away, and doesn't matter how we got to this point, we are in this point. And I bring this up because 6 months ago, 7 months ago, it seemed like the end of the world. But now that the NCAA has legalized cheating, is it still a big a deal?
Well, it's kind of funny because Tennessee fans sort of always feel like they're cursed, and of course, Tennessee fans, they might be the last people to really get hammered by the NCAA with real penalties because it's going to be so easy to sort of, you know, this money, you can get it, you know, in more legal ways now. And, you know, if Tennessee had waited a year, you didn't have this investigation, you know, you can sort of move that money around in different ways and make it work for you. So that's certainly unlucky on Tennessee's part. But I think, you know, there's some questions around whether or not they feel like, well, can we sort of get off easier because the rules have changed, and I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think they're going to get, you know, the hammer. I think basically, you know, somewhere around double-digit scholarship reductions, and they feel good about a one-year bowl ban in general. I think you're probably going to see them self-impose that before the season starts.
And this year?
This year, probably. And that's what they're hoping, and then you got to wait for the NCAA to say, yeah, we sign off on that. I have a hard time believing that in this climate they're going to come over the top on that. Maybe they will. Maybe I'm wrong. The NCAA generally acts without precedent, and they're very hard to predict and the timing and all that stuff. But the investigation's been so thorough. Tennessee's been kind of leading the charge on trying to get that done so they don't have to worry about NCAA investigators. And that's their hope, that 1 year is going to be enough and some scholarship reductions
so,
on top of that.
I mean, you can make a case for Tennessee going to a bowl game this year.
Yeah.
Schedule is
pretty easy.
Pretty mild. Is when you make the bowl ban self-imposed, do you add it? Do you go scholarships as well?
Some. The number is going to be up for debate on what that looks like and how you space that out. There was some question when Tennessee, you know, they had a bunch of scholarships freed up because guys wanted out of their letters of intent after Pruitt and those guys were gone. And there was some question about, okay, well, do we impose those now and just leave those spots open? The answer to that is no. They went and got transfers. They mined the portal, got a bunch of guys from all over the place. They're full now, so they aren't taking those. So they're not doing that. The question that some people are asking around Knoxville is, well, okay, well, then do you get real brave and say we're not going to do a bowl ban in year one and then wait for the NCAA to come over the top because of the current climate? I don't think they'll do that. But as a writer, it'd be more interesting to write about, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and you tell us, you know, usually you can be wrong, but, you know, the guys that are making the decisions, we're not talking about administrators. We were talking about, you know, Michael Glazer, people like that who are former investigators who literally sleep with the NCAA, so to speak. I mean, they're all buddies, winking and nod, so they have a reasonable idea of what they need to do.
Yeah.
That's still a lot of scholarships, though, isn't it?
I mean, I think so. But ultimately, I think the scholarships for them don't seem to be the thing that they're losing sleep over. The thing that's killing them right now that is happening on the recruiting trail is they don't have an answer.
Okay.
And Tennessee is hoping that it's the 1 year, but there are coaches that are saying, no, it's going to be 2-3. You're going to be a senior before, you know, you – and that – you can't combat that for a number of reasons. For one, you can't point to anything and say, no, this, and that's what Tennessee is trying to get. But then on top of that, he hasn't recruited a lot of these guys. He doesn't have the relationships with them. So if you're Josh Heupel and you've known this kid for 6 months and a coach that he's known for 3 years is saying, I don't know, I heard it's going to be 2-3 years. You might be an upperclassman before you're going to play. The kid has to choose who to believe, and that's a tough spot for Tennessee to be in.
I mean,
there's no real way to combat it.
Yeah, Tennessee used to compete with everyone for the top five players, and I'm sure there's always a good player that goes there. But by and large, when Josh Heupel is out there recruiting right now, who are they competing with?
A lot of Midwestern schools right now. I mean, I think right now they're sitting at 12th in the SEC and 30th overall, something like that. I mean, it's been rough, and it's been rough in-state for all those reasons. The dead period didn't help them.
Who is getting the players that normally would have been going to Tennessee?
Kentucky's grabbed a couple of them. Let's see. Stanford is fighting for them. Fisher Anderson headed over there. I mean, they've had two fantastic talents. Walter Nolan and Ty Simpson are two of the best players that have ever played in the state of Tennessee. Ty Simpson going to Alabama. Walter Nolan, Tennessee's back in the mix there. He's a guy that's like a top five national recruit. He's actually moving from Memphis to Knoxville. Tennessee was not in his top eight. They are in his top five. They're still kind of on the outside there. It seems like, you know, Alabama and Georgia and the sort of the usual suspects are well positioned there. But it's kind of been a mixture of places. There's not really been one single. Michigan's grabbed a couple guys. You know, Tennessee, this is a crucial year for them to try to lock down the borders. But, again, the dead period, you're playing from behind, you have the sanctions, all that stuff, and it's been tough for them.
Please don't think this is directed at you as an administrator.
I'm bracing for impact.
Tell me this, Dave, and pass it along to Danny White or Josh Heupel. How do you advance in the SEC if you're battling Kentucky for players and you're struggling right now and you still haven't self-imposed yet?
You don't. But the one thing I think they're hoping on is, well, when people can see the offense in action, maybe people reconsider. And you're putting some points up, you're being a lot more aggressive. It's going to be a more fun offense. I mean,
for sure.
Tennessee...
anything would be more fun.
For real. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir at this point. Tennessee, at this point, you know, last year, not only are you, or the last few years, you're not only mediocre and bad, you're mediocre, bad, and boring. And that is a brutal combination. So Tennessee, you know, they're not going to win 10 games this year, but, you know, if you're going 5-7, 6-6, and you're, you know, winning games 41-37, losing games, you know, 55-45, listen, fans will rather watch that than watch you get pasted, what, 31-3 at home to Kentucky? Like, that stuff you can't really sell. And so you can't really compete the way that Tennessee wants to compete, if you're struggling not only around the country but in your own state with the Kentuckys and Michigans and all that stuff, but, you know, ultimately you want to try to build those relationships, sell your offense, and then if you get a quarterback, people want to play with that quarterback, and, you know, you get your sanctions done and you figure out what that is. That's sort of what they're hoping the path is, but they've got a lot to prove, and the battle is uphill because they're not going to be winning games for a little while.
A little while?
Well, what's winning games is sort of the question. 10 games, that might be tough. Getting to 8 in year 2 or year 3 seems reasonable, especially if you hit on a quarterback. If Harrison Bailey's your guy, if Joe Milton comes up and he shows up, then, okay, you got some pieces.
So Pittsburgh this year, what does a non-conference schedule look like down the road?
Just Pittsburgh. It's Tennessee Tech, South Alabama, and Bowling Green.
So what
maybe
about,
the
what
worst.
About the next 2 or 3 years?
Let's see. They got BYU coming up.
That went well.
Yeah, for real. I think they got BYU coming up in a couple of years. I think they got Pitt again.
They're trying to avoid.
They're not playing the massive games. Yeah. You're not going to have, you know, when you already have your crossover game with Alabama and you got to play Georgia every year, you know, they're not beating down the door. You know, they just signed that Syracuse deal in 25 to play in Atlanta. So, no, they're not really searching for the marquee USC type of
stuff. There's a reasonable
USC
shot in the next couple years at four wins a year,
yeah.
Which, you know, Vanderbilt 5. So I'm just trying to do the math to get him to a bowl game before things get
Yeah, clear. And you know, as bad as the roster is, I still think they've got a little more talent than South Carolina, but South Carolina's recruiting better than them right now, and so we'll see kind of what that looks like. But if you can sort of reverse that trend and just sit there, you're sitting on 5 or 6, and then it's like, okay, what can you do with Kentucky? What can you do with Mizzou? What can you do? Can you steal one from whoever your crossover is in the West opposite Alabama? But Alabama and Georgia and Florida, you know, Jerry Pruitt said it when he took over. I don't think they've been quite as brash when they've taken over here, but the reality is Tennessee fans are going to be happy with 8 wins for like a year. Like when you win 8 and if you don't win 9 the next year, regardless of whatever happened to you, you know, if you're bouncing back to 6, that's going to be tough to sell. And, you know, if you don't fix the recruiting aspect of it, that's going to be a problem.
Fuller got thrown out you know, for having a bad year or two.
Yeah.
The first time.
Yeah. And you have to clarify. But, yeah, I think problems upon problems that have been compounded with bad decisions and bad hires. And, you know, you have a little bit of bad luck with the Lane Kiffin situation where that's just, there's not much you can do. But that 3 head coaches in 3 years, I think they've never really been able to recover from that, because it seems like even when Butch had it going a little bit, you know, certainly were cracks in the foundation there, but then the bottom fell out. And Pruitt, you know, never really got much of anything going. I mean, they had a little bit, but you didn't really beat anybody, and the lopsided losses were a problem. And, you know, now they're selling fun at Tennessee, but you gotta. It's not that fun to go 6-6.
I mentioned Danny White, and you know, it was. He celebrated higher on the day but a week later, when you know he took over the Josh Heupel press conference and took a few swings at the fans. Has that settled down, or is the AD just somewhat off the beat, off the main circuit?
Well, he kept Tony Vitello, which helped him. I think that, you know, baseball and basketball doing well helped calm some of the so-called negativity on that front. I mean, I think Tennessee fans are just so frustrated, and they've been so beaten down that, you know, there's not the same level of belief in that in what they used to have. Like when Dooley came, when Butch came, or even Pruitt early on, people were like,
"I thought Pruitt was
this
great.
The guy. This is the guy. Like, let's go."
That's
You're not really seeing that yet with Heupel, and I think part of that is, you know, the results at UCF. Part of that is they've seen this before, and I think the fans are just tired. They want a winner, and they want, you know, something that is sustainable that they can be proud of. That's the state's flagship program. It's been hard to be proud of Tennessee football for a while.
David, yeah, he's. We know what he's good at. You know, communicating better than Jeremy Pruitt is not a skill set anyone.
God bless
America doesn't. I mean, I couldn't find anybody worse. But he also does not seem like a salesman either. He seems like a football coach.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think you know, in general, sort of just the general way that you kind of treat people and the general way that you carry go about your daily business. A little bit smoother around the facilities these days, I would say. But you just have so much to prove, and you have such a gigantic task ahead of you that's always looming. Even when players are happy and, you know, you're going bowling or you're doing all this, fun stuff, it's still like, okay, that's good, but you still have to win games, and the task ahead of you just seems gargantuan when you look at how far they have to climb and who you got to climb over to get there and what you have to do to get over who you got to climb over. I mean, you're looking up at Florida and Georgia, and it's amazing.
Well,
how far that seems.
Yeah, the only reason I'm harping on this, I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly, but it just seems like 2-3 years from now, we'll be having familiar conversations nobody wants to have.
Maybe right. We'll see. Every job is different. Every person is different. Every fit is different. But at this point, the recruiting is a little bit of a red flag at this point. But there's a lot of reasons for why that may be happening. But when those reasons start to dissipate, time passes. You self-impose. You figure out that stuff.
Okay.
Then it has to improve. But that comment, I mean, it's still about
We're waiting for that moment.
Certainly people have their opinions on how this is going to go, but it's hard to have those opinions and have them be fully fair until you're playing with a full deck, where Tennessee is not right now. But again, it all comes down to you got to win games.
What's
you
the one game on
talent.
The schedule that they could turn this year?
Pitt. Oh, to turn to
some surprise, like I can't believe.
I mean, you could go to. I mean, maybe you could maybe go to Kentucky and win. Okay. I mean, I think Kentucky's gonna be really good this year, but they. It's you look at the schedule, you have three gimmies, basically. You have Pitt, which is their second game of the year, which will tell you a lot about them. They could win that game. If they're winning that by double digits, you kind of have to raise your eyebrows a little bit and say, oh, okay, maybe they got something. But then you're better than Vandy. You should take care of South Carolina, but you could lose that game. And then it's Kentucky and Mizzou. I think those are the ones that you look at. And then you get Ole Miss at home. Ole Miss is going to be able to beat anybody, but until the defense is fixed, they might be able to lose to just about anybody.
Okay.
So I think Ole Miss... if you catch them, maybe. If you can score some points and you have a off day, you win the turnover battle, maybe you can surprise them. So I'd say, that Kentucky, Mizzou, Ole Miss, if you can steal one of those three and you take care of business everywhere else, you start looking, you got some pieces. But then you got to not lose the games you're supposed to win, which was a problem for Jeremy Pruitt. I don't know if you remember the Georgia State game. A lot of people forget that game, but it was a problem for them. They lost a handful of games that you feel like you probably should win.
I didn't remember that game at all. You're at a table with two Tennessee graduates here.
Yeah, the little men in black thing. I think all the Tennessee fans, as soon as that game was over, they turned to the flashlight in the face and wiped that from their memory. So I think it certainly seemed like that's what Philip Fulmer did when they handed out the extension at the end of the season. So it's Tennessee has made some poor decisions that have compounded upon more poor decisions, and now you're sitting there in a really difficult spot asking a guy in Josh Heupel to dig you out of there.
David, thanks. I know we peppered you with all the questions that Tennessee fans want to hear, but we will continue this. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting fall. Thanks, Paul.
David Ubbin from The Athletic. We'll take a break. We're live at SEC Media Days.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Day two of SEC Media Days, and much on tap in the next few minutes. Lane Kiffin will drop by. He is making a lot of news today with some comments about NIL. Of course, a big story which came out earlier out of Texas, Nick Saban acknowledging that Bryce Young is over the $1 million mark in NIL money. And that brings us to our set here with Gene Chizik joining us. And Coach, I don't mean this to sound the wrong way because there was a controversy, but I was just thinking, what kind of money do you think Cam Newton would have made off of NIL?
Maybe as much as he's making now, Paul. Who knows?
Where is all this going?
Who knows? I mean, I think that caught everybody off guard today. I mean, up to this point, everything was probably relatively what everybody thought, right? People are going to get deals. It wasn't really revealed what those deals would look like. But this is a little bit of what I talked about this morning on another show, Paul, that I worry about. So right now, let's go back to the NFL years ago when a first-round draft pick, let's use a quarterback as the example, it was really unlimited, you know, what they could make. I remember when Vince Young signed with us out of Texas. I think he was the third pick of the draft. I think he signed for close to $50
million. Right.
But the point was, is they've changed that. And the reason they changed it is because these guys are signing for all this money and they haven't played it down in the NFL yet, right? Isn't this kind of the same thing? And I worry a little bit about this, Paul, from a locker room perspective. And that was what was always great about college football. Everybody in the locker room, scholarships were all the same, right? Everybody was, you know, on the same playing field. Now, all of a sudden, you've got guys that haven't played it down signing deals like this. Now, look, they're hedging their bet. They're saying Bryce Young's going to be, you know, what Mac Jones was and Tua was, and I get all that. The point is that in locker rooms across the country, what will this do if they sign deals like this and then all of a sudden they're not productive? They aren't what they thought they would be. You know that's going to happen. I don't know that it'll happen to this degree with this much money, but these are the things that I worry about in the college football playing field.
I want you to take us into that locker room for a second, Coach, because not only is it an issue internally, but from a coaching standpoint, you try to shut off the noise. You had one of the most famous players in history. You know, sometimes they're easy to control, sometimes they're not, but never have they ever made that kind of money. And money changes everyone.
Well, just think about it, Paul. Some of these guys are making more money than their coaches.
Yeah.
They're 18. I mean, that's potentially the truth, right? So those are the things I worry about. And look, I don't want people to think that I'm an NIL hater, because I'm going to tell you something. I want the college experience for these young guys to be the best it can be, okay? And there's hundreds of millions and billions of dollars being made on their image and likeness. So I get that. But the problem is that we're a little bit in the wild, wild west, Paul, because there's really not a lot of rules out there that, you know, there's no governing body. Greg, you know, Commissioner Sankey said it yesterday. They need federal legislation. They need Congress to put some concrete rules on what this looks like. And today was just one surprise, right? What are the other unintended consequences that are going to come for this? Let's say, and this is what I worry about, because I love the game of college football. I worry about recruiting. I worry about what some, there's smart people out there right now in a lot of realms that right now are just thinking, let's see, what can I do to really, you know, get the shock value up and make this deal with this guy? What's going to happen with the recruiting piece of this? And what is going to happen a year from now that we didn't see coming? We're like, whoa, this giving so many people great recruiting advantages over others, because there's no consistent rule out there, and I worry about that in anything that doesn't have a governing body.
I know I'm not asking you to violate confidence, because you're friends with a lot of coaches. A lot of them worked for you or were associated with you, but I'm just curious for a composite on what you're hearing from your friends in coaching right now, and what are they facing?
Well, if you're talking about the NIL, I think they're all very level-headed about it. I think the majority, the lion's share of their guys, they don't got to worry about, because these deals are really for the few and far between, right? We know that. So, but what they are worried about, Paul, is how it may affect these guys as individual players. I think Ed O said it best yesterday. When it's time to worry about the NIL stuff, let's worry about the NIL stuff. But when it's time for you to be a teammate, be in the locker room, focus on your job, what is your job to make this team better? I don't need you out there trying to figure out how you can get up your followers on Instagram right. so you can get a better deal. And these are the challenges that I think coaches have with this. I don't think they're too worried about it. But where they'll become worried about it is when there's unintended consequences that are starting to happen on their football teams that maybe they never saw coming, because we don't know what we don't know yet. But division in the locker room, for me, from a 10,000-foot view, division in the locker room because everybody is not equal. They know that in the NFL, so that's common knowledge, right? You are what you are. 43 guys on the team out of a 53-man roster, they're going to make minimum to not a whole lot respectively to what the others make, but they know that. But what happens in these locker rooms, like I said, five-star guys come in. This is Bryce Young, who's been there for a year. What's going to happen next year when a five-star guy comes in that's never played a down, and he's going to make X amount of money, and the guy that we think may be the starter doesn't get the same deal? What does that look like? So I worry about that from that perspective, from a coaching perspective.
Let me get to another very complicated issue, and it was the theme of yesterday, but it's resonated today all over college athletics. And that was what Commissioner Sankey said about the vaccine. Every coach has come here or will come here, and I'm not outside in the lobby asking coaches whether, they've been vaccinated or have told their players, but it's becoming a bigger issue. And I'm curious, as a coach, as somebody who has been behind this, is that a fair question to ask a coach? Have you been vaccinated, and are you recommending your players to be vaccinated?
Fair question or not, I feel like it's going to be asked, particularly as we get closer to the season. And for whatever the reason, the information leaks out that, your football team is 55% right. vaccinated, right? I mean, so those questions, fair or not fair, will be asked. I think there's a lot of different perspectives on it. The bottom line is that, they want herd immunity. That's why you're looking for the 85% vaccination rate on your football team. That's the goal. Players, you don't want to bring politics anything, but, people see some of that as a political thing. You don't want to get into all that. But here's the deal. We can't forfeit football games.
Right.
That's the bottom line. That's what this is all about, Paul. There's no forfeiting football games and making up games like we did last year. If your guys aren't vaccinated and for whatever the reason, you get, infected and there's other people involved and you feel like, boy, I can't even play in this game. I don't have enough guys. Too bad. You're not making it up. It's a forfeit. So I think that's just that's the underlying premise of what they're trying to get done.
And they're political or not, I mean, their statistics bear out a lot when you look at them in terms of classification, who's getting vaccinated, who's not, where are they getting vaccinated, where are they not. And you can't scrape away the fact that where we are right now in Alabama and the surrounding areas, it's a really serious issue. It's an issue for society, but we're not talking about society here. We're talking about college football. And I don't know, as a head coach, if you have not been vaccinated, how are you going to sit up here, whether it's today or before the season, when you're at 42%, and your fan base, they may not be vaccinated either, but they want you to win the game.
100%. And you're right, Paul. I mean, don't do as I say, do as I do, right? So for a coach not to be vaccinated and you're asking your players to be vaccinated, that's a tall order. So I don't know the right answer. There's some people that are very convicted that that's not what they want to do. Coaching-wise, if there's 126, FBS coaches right now, I don't know how many of the 126 have not been vaccinated.
But some of them haven't.
But that's what I was going to say. But I can guarantee you there's several that have not. So that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I bring this up because I am fairly confident these stories are going to start getting out. And then it's a whole nother privacy conversation. And I think, I don't know whether it'll happen this week or not, but I was particularly curious to talk to someone like you who has dealt with that.
Most of the guys that I have talked to are, and they're adamant for one reason, Paul, because they know they can't sit up there and ask the other 125 sure. guys in their room to do it, and they're not. They know that. They're smart enough to know that. So most of the ones I've talked to, but I just know in talking to some other people, there's people that are very, they've dug their cleats in. They're not moving on.
No, and everybody thinks they know something. You know a lot more than most of us, but you know, I think within this league, these issues are going to continue to come up, and I'm concerned because I don't. It's not fair for me to ask you about anything in your life other than your opinion of sports.
Right.
And you know, we are getting very close to that point.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you're not going to be able to escape it. And you know, it may. Peer pressure is real, right, too. I mean, you start getting the pressure of those questions and, you know, thinking you're going to get, you know, and maybe you're these coaches are human, right? So they can
We've
start
heard that rumor somewhere.
But, you know, they can start out digging their sure. cleats in, and then all of a sudden this thing starts looking like it's getting closer to being a public scenario. And maybe they change. Maybe they change their tune. I don't know. But I know you have guys on both sides of the spectrum as we speak today.
Next time we talk to you, we'll talk about football. But there are some pretty big issues out there off the field that you are well familiar with. Thanks, Coach, for coming by.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it very much. Coach Gene Shizik joining us. We are live at SEC Media Days. Lane Kiffin around the corner. We'll ask him some of these questions as well. And we are coming right back.
You are listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to SEC Media Day. Have you heard about this? Let me share a tweet. This is from Pat Smith. And I don't know where to go with this because for those listening on radio, this happened at SWAC Media Days today. The biggest name in the conference, Deion Sanders, walks out after someone called him Deion. Now, I have to tell you, this is a big deal. This came up last year with Nick Saban, that a Birmingham sportscaster, Rick Carley, went on a tirade because he felt like Nick Saban should be addressed as coach. Now, let me also say this. I know this is a little easier to talk about than the vaccine. I agree that coaches, I believe that when I'm interviewing you, you're a coach, even though I know you personally. But that doesn't really mean you should walk out if you're not addressed as a coach, considering you've only been a coach for a year.
Now, I think there's a lot of other things you ought to worry about as a coach, especially this day and age. I'm not sure how they address you really is one of them. I've been addressed by a lot of things a lot worse than coach, I can tell you that, Paul, on a regular basis.
But I think with Saban, Coach Saban, it's like me walking, you know, I covered his last 2 years, me walking into a press conference and Tesco say, "Hey, Bear, let me ask you a question." I mean, you just don't do it.
That wouldn't go over well.
And he's in that league. Let's talk about another subject I know you've been very vocal on, and that's the rather overflowing transfer portal. Yep. What gives?
You know, Paul, I think everything goes back to the genesis of rules, right? So it was the coaches had all the power when it came to a player that didn't fit. And the coach made the call. Yes, you can transfer. No, you can transfer. And yes, I'll let you transfer here, but not there. Okay. Well, that is one-sided, right? So then the big thing was, well, look, coaches leave and move all the time. So why can't players? Totally get it. Theoretically, makes sense. So we get to the transfer portal, right? Everybody's name goes in there, so it's easy for compliance guys to, you know, monitor and regulate things of that nature. Here's the problem with the transfer portal that nobody's talking enough about. Commissioner Sankey addressed it yesterday. And here's my problem, Paul. In theory, look, I'm not against transferring. As a matter of fact, every fit isn't the great fit. Every fit isn't the perfect fit. Where I have a problem with it is that the numbers that are entering the transfer portal on full scholarship and really hedging their bet with themselves and saying, look, my value is this, and then all of a sudden there's no takers. There's nowhere for these guys to go. So guys that had a chance to get an education for $200,000 are sitting there on the streets right now going, what am I going to do now? You're going to go walk on? Well, you still, if you're going to walk on, you got to pay for college now. Well, a lot of these guys can't pay for college. And so this is where this becomes a life-changing decision, that it was a knee-jerk reaction, Paul. They either didn't have the people around them, the guidance, the people to bounce things off. My proposal that I said this morning that makes sense is to slow this down. There's not free agency year-round in the NFL. There's windows of free agency, right? Why can't we have free agents or have windows for the transfer portal? And here's why, Paul. Because it's Tuesday afternoon. It's 105 degrees out. I just got lambasted by my position coach. I come off the practice field. He told me I'm not going to start. I'm transferring. Let me hit a tweet. I'm in the transfer portal. Because they can. Okay? I'm saying let's do something where there's a window where, you know, you can't enter the transfer portal. You can't take your bat and ball and go home right now. Let's cool off. Let's get a period of time, maybe after the season ends, where there's a window where we can go back and sit down with the parents, sit down with the coach, sit down with whoever's important in your life. Let's really reflect on, is this the right decision for you or not? Because you know what? You may enter the portal and end up with nothing.
Right.
And you have no degree. You have nothing to lean on. Because we go to college to get a degree. We don't go to college to play football only. Okay? Now, some do. Let's not fool ourselves. But the NFL dudes are few and far between. So what you're doing is you're taking these guys that have all this grass is greener on the other side mentality, and they got nowhere to go. And those numbers are real. But we don't talk about that, because here's what we talk about. Well, if coaches can leave, players can leave. Well, of course they can, but let's get some guidelines and let's get some, let's make this make more sense. Slow the process down where it's not a knee-jerk reaction. You think about it, you talk about it, you make a great decision with a lot of people, then transfer. Put you in the portal and you're still good. You can play the next year. But none of this knee-jerk reaction. If I made every decision at 19 years old, I got some bad decisions now.
Always a pleasure. It's so great to have this conversation, substantive conversation over these issues. Coach, we will talk to you very soon.
Thank you, Paul.
Coach Gene Chizik joining us, and a fantastic time it was. We will take a break. Lane Kiffin, Coach Stoops, and many more as we continue day two, SEC Media Days.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.